When I was in high school, I studied abroad for a semester in Spain, specifically in the Basque region of Spain. Like the family I lived with, many people in the Basque region of Spain speak three languages. My family that I lived with spoke Basque with each other, Spanish with their friends, and English whenever they could practice. Because I was there to learn Spanish, my family spoke Spanish when I was around. Basque is a completely different language than Spanish. In fact, it is unrelated to any other known living language. I went to a bilingual high school where the students took their classes in Spanish and or in Basque. I took all my classes in Spanish except for French class, which I took in Basque. It was an experience. It was amazing to see my Spanish friends shift effortlessly from Spanish to English to Basque in one conversation. And this means that the languages rub off on one another. Extremely common words like hello, goodbye, and thank you are always said in Basque, even if you're speaking Spanish. So I always said aupa for hello, and eskerrik asko for thank you, and agur for goodbye. When I returned here to Midland and was speaking to native Spanish speakers, I had to catch myself and not say those words in Basque. On a popular radio show called Freakonomics, the hosts have a segment called Earth 2.0, where they consider what we might want to change if we had the chance to start Earth and humanity off from scratch. In one installment, they explore what it would mean if all humans spoke the same language instead of the 7,000 different languages we now have. One benefit is that we'd all have access to the same systems of learning and power. As it is now, many people have to spend much of their time and money learning English or another dominant language in order to have access to dominant political, technological, and economic power structures. Plus, perhaps many wars and disagreements could be avoided if we could all speak the same language. But is it even possible? Language, as I confirmed yesterday with Tom Parks, our linguistics professor, language has a bias toward change and diversity. So even if we all started out with one language across the globe, over the years it would change and diversify in different regions, adjusting to those people and their culture and circumstances. The only way a language stays the same across time and geography and peoples is through power. That is why all the dominant languages of the world, such as English, are languages of empires. Colonization has always included stamping out difference and enforcing uniformity through direct and indirect means. So if we tried to create or enforce one singular global language, we as humanity would miss out on the benefits of diversity. Language filters and focuses our attention on different aspects of the environment. So some would say this enables different ways of experiencing the world. For example, the linguist Benjamin Wolf said that because English treats time as being broken up into chunks that can be counted, 3 days, 4 minutes, half an hour, English speakers tend to treat time as a group of objects, seconds, minutes, hours, instead of a smooth, unbroken stream. This, he said, makes us think that time is stuff, can be saved, wasted, or lost. The Hopi, he said, don't talk about time in those terms. For them, it is that continuous cycle. So one of the stories that often comes up to bemoan the inconvenience of so many diverse languages in our world is the cool story of the Tower of Babel. How many people have heard of this story, Tower of Babel? So the common interpretation of this story says humans tried to build a tower to heaven, and for this pride, they were punished by God by suddenly speaking in different languages and not being able to understand each other and thus not being able to complete the tower. So in this interpretation, diversity is seen as punishment from God. Diversity is punishment. But the Jewish scholar Rabbi Jonathan Sacks says, no, that is not what this story means or what it meant the people who wrote it. It's true that the builders of the tower were trying to reach heaven. In fact, the Ziggurat of Babel, or Babel, was a real historical structure. For millennia, the tallest structure known, and on it was written, "This is the gate of heaven." And according to the story, that did bother God. But the additional historical context many current readers miss is that this tower was in Mesopotamia, the first place, according to Jonathan Sacks, where empire first appeared. The first time that empire sought to impose their one culture and language on others. But the book of Genesis had already described God as one who favored not uniformity, but ordered diversity. So Rabbi Sacks says, quote, "The Tower of Babel attempts to transgress the natural boundaries that God has created when God creates diversity." Read Genesis 1, and the key recurring word, and here, some language I will probably butcher the Hebrew, the key recurring word is liminohem, limino, limina. He created plants, animals, birds, fish, liminohem, according to different kinds. The essence of Genesis 1 is ordered diversity. By attempting to suppress the individuality of those nations they conquer and their distinct languages, the Mesopotamians and the builders of Babel transgress that boundary which God has created. Biodiversity in Genesis 1 and human diversity in Genesis 10. End quote. So when God confuses their efforts by making them all speak different languages, it is not a punishment, but a correction, even a revelation, a statement that no, not that, but this is what I want. Multiplicity, diversity. Rabbi Sacks concludes that this story of Babel is one of several meta-narratives in the Bible critiquing the attempt to impose a single truth on a plural world. God's preference is what Sacks calls radical otherness and the dignity of difference. And so here, in a church that strives to honor and celebrate difference, I love it that thanks to Tom's generosity, we now have this historical artifact and powerful symbol right here in our sanctuary, this tablet with multiple languages on it, with multiplicity. It's a symbol emblematic of the diversity among us and our responsibility in a diverse, covenanted community to do our own listening and translating so that we can each bring ourselves here as we are without disappearing difference. Now, of course, as Tom has lifted up in our reading today that he, David, and I just did, this symbol also serves as a warning. The words written on the tablet articulate the unchanging human tendency toward empire and forced unity. If the powerful in our country were to carve words on a stone now for all to see, might it say something similar to what King Ptolemy wrote? So this symbol in our sanctuary also serves as a warning against that which moves within history, within the fragile part of our human spirit that fears diversity and seeks uniformity. We know there is another part of the human spirit, the part that knows that diversity strengthens us. The part of us that knows that our universe and our lives have a bias toward diversity, a love for multiplicity. As Tom, David, and I discussed the Rosetta Stone a couple days ago, they pointed out to me that even though Ptolemy, the ruler who inscribed the stone, was so afraid of those Greeks taking over, even though he would have loved probably to create the equivalent of an ink-only environment, hieroglyphics only, I guess it would be. Even though the text of the stone expresses this fear in word, nevertheless, he still inscribed it in three languages. So we have here three languages. Even he had to admit diversity. And because he included three languages, the discovery of this tablet opened up centuries, millennia, of diverse human history to be translated and interpreted for the first time because of the diversity on the tablet. But as you might imagine, that even that process of discovering and translating the Rosetta Stone was not pure and good. Different cultures fought over claims to the stone. It was taken out of Egypt during French colonial rule and is now an Egypt stone, but at the British Museum in London. Egypt has been asking for it to be returned to them for a long time. Time does not change us. It just unfolds us. But again, the words of our Unitarian Universalist colleague Leslie Takahashi. The day is coming when all will know that the rainbow world is more gorgeous than monochrome, that a river of identity can ebb and flow over the static, stubborn rocks in its course, that the margins hold the center. May it be so.